What's your lemonade stand story?
And he was like, YouTube's going to be the next big thing, Devin. Like, you need to get on that. You need to get on it early. And I'm like,
And all of us, we all go through our own trials, our own level of stuff.
Sure hope this works out. Otherwise, this will be a huge waste of time.
I mean, what else is it all about other than just taking risks and continuing to try and grow and hopefully get better and better at making things?
Most of the billion-dollar brands you've seen were started by people that were just solving a problem for themselves.
We're telling Lemonade Stand stories from some of the world's top creators, makers, and go-getters.
We're rolling right now.
Hey,
people are having fun. We're rolling.
Yeah.
Hey guys, this podcast today is sponsored by Yala, a task management and team collaboration software that we use at Lemonade Stand. We use Yala to keep all of our team members organized, wherever they are. In fact, we used it to plan and organize this podcast. Visit yala.team, that's yalla.team, and try it for free. We also have a special offer for all listeners of this podcast. Use promo code LEMONADE and get a lifetime 25% off if you upgrade.
Okay, we are rolling. We are rolling with Mr. David.
Finally. Austin. Oh, I thought we were like having this like 20-minute conversation.
We were. It was amazing.
So fill out all the people in that weren't a part of the conversation we just had. What did we talk about?
Oh, man. Well, we first talked about where our lives are going. And pretty much we wrapped everything up by the time I started.
We had a good cry. We got some good therapy out. Yep. So thanks, everybody, for joining us. It's been awesome. Thank you, Charon.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, David, for joining
me. See you guys.
Yeah, we'll see you guys later. It's been great. You know what, though? Hang on. Since we're rolling now, let's just do a recap, like a quick little recap
We
talked about. Okay? But, dude, it's crazy because we've been buddies for a while, and I'm trying to figure out... A good couple weeks.
We haven't actually met. I mean, we've been in quarantine since...
Five years ago, you know.
Seems like it. But, I was thinking about this as we were going to have our conversation. I can't remember the first time you and I met.
Neither can I. I actually think it must have been some sort of reunion at like Donnie's house or something. I think it was. I'm friends with your brothers. Like I work with your brother Doug, and I'm friends with Nathan. I'm friends with Scott. I'm trying to think, like, somehow or other, we must have crossed paths, and we have attempted to do some stuff together, and just, like, I don't know.
You know what? We have been friends, like, forever, since pre-existent time, but seriously, like, I have to ask you, because I still slaughter this, even though we're, like, good friends, right. I still don't know how to say your last name, right? Is it Prabhakakakari?
Probably
I got it wrong.
That's it.
Prabhakar.
Prabhakar. Prabhakar.
It's awesome. Yeah. Prabhakar. I'm sorry. I had to ask.
Dude, no, it's all good. Yeah.
There's one and only Charon. Everybody just knows Charon. And Charon P.
Charon P. That's all. There's one Charon and there's one Charon P, as it turns out. But we have been buddies for a while, and but it's crazy, and then we can also go like a span of a few years without ever seeing each other, and then all of a sudden we certainly try, don't we? We've tried.
But it's magnetism, man. You can't keep us apart.
It has to come back.
No, you but. Seriously, man, you are such a good friend. You've always been that way since day one, since Donnie's house. Yeah. And seriously, my brother from another mother, man, you're such a good dude. And I love the things you're working on. That's one of the things we were talking about, is all these different projects that were going on. We've been working on stuff that we've even crossed paths on similar projects. Yeah. Obviously you've been acting, your whole life. That's your forte. You're doing a ton of stuff, projects that way. What are you working on?
Well, honestly, man, like, it's kind of crazy, right? Like during quarantine, like it's been a weird process of trying to figure out, okay, where do I need to focus my energy on and all that stuff. And truth be told, I haven't nailed exactly the path I need to go down. There's a couple of TV shows that I've been producing. And the reason why I even moved back from LA to Utah was so I can produce my own shows. I think LA taught me a lot of lessons about how crews work and how TV runs. And I loved it. It was awesome. I'm like, this is amazing. I want to do more TV. But I realized as I was, I remember being on the set or not on the set, at a premiere party of one of the shows I was in.
Yeah.
Just being there and feeling the energy of the people. I remember thinking, I've got to create my own TV show. I have to create my own show. My heart was there and my mind was there. And I'm like, all right, how do I do this? So yeah. I moved back to Utah to create my own show. So I've got two pilots that I'm working on right now. I've got a kids show called Let's Get Epic. And then I've got another, like a family friendly show. You were a part of, you went to set and saw Pen Pals.
So, that's right.
So that one's
it's done. Great, dude. Yeah. Did it get released? Or are you still working on that? Cause you know if it hasn't, you guys have to see it.
Yeah.
It's a great concept and you kill it, man.
Oh, thanks.
It's really funny.
Yeah. A lot of fun. It is out online for people to watch the pilot. And yeah, right now we're trying to, I mean, of course everything's kind of shut down, but we were in the process of like shopping around to studios and trying to figure out the right process of attaching a showrunner and a production company to help take it to the networks. And that's a whole other world that I'm not even familiar with. So I was in the process of learning that when all of this kind of went down. So
you know what's interesting though, because of this, the last 30 days of just insane madness, Vanity Fair did a great article about our industry in particular, whether it's music or film, television, production, entertainment. It'll never be the same. It's going to be totally evolved and flipped, turned upside down. And even doing stuff like this, we're getting used to this format, being able to see each other in our elements, in our living rooms. You know, we can look at our Diane Sawyer from her kitchen table, you know, and be totally cool with it. Some of the things we talked about before we started filming was doing good projects, things that inspire and promote, especially for kids and family. I don't know if you've seen this week. Is it John Krasinski from
I just the saw Office? It today, dude. I saw it today. Some good news.
Something good news. Oh my gosh, dude.
So good.
Awesome. It's perfect. It's, you know, simple production. You know, it took a lot of, you know, elements. You turn a lot of editing and there's good writing and people submitting stories and stuff. But I think we're craving that. And we don't mind that it's a little bit raw. I think it's even better. The shows you're doing, like there's going to be a lot of new things coming out because of the climate of the industry right now.
Well, the thing I love about it is, like with Some Good News, it's so authentic and it just feels so real, right?
Yeah.
And I love that. I think like that's what people really want. You want to see that authenticity because people can connect with that.
Yeah.
So I love the fact that like we're kind of going like a little bit lower budget and the quality because like
it helps out our bottom line. That's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Dude, ever since I've known you, you've always had a million projects that you were doing at the same time. And I never knew how you did all the stuff that you did. And you were like listing off like four separate projects that were so awesome. So let's go ahead and talk about each of those.
I think it's ADD a little bit. I think a little bit of like squirrel going on in my life. This is really, I think, the case. I grew up in showbiz. My dad was in entertainment. I just assumed every kid's dad was a singer and traveled and performed, and it was just nothing different.
Yeah.
And then, so I did the same. I grew up singing since I was just a little kid. On stage performing was just my life. So that's kind of my foundation, and I think it always will be there in different regards. But the one thing about show business and entertainment is as soon as that curtain goes down, you're immediately unemployed. So like it is gig to gig to gig.
Yeah.
And if that gig starts, if you can't keep that curtain up, boy, you're starving. So I think maybe having all these different projects and things is a way to just put irons in the fire and also passion projects, things that I love that I'm interested in. And some things totally just bomb. They just don't work out. Some things continue and you have a good time. So still in that vein, still working and creating like you are on show ideas, concepts for music projects and just creation and music's my foundation, film, television, entertainment's yours. And I think we just got to collaborate. We got to create something together.
We got to collaborate. What do you say? Well, what I love is you're expanding your horizon because, in fact, if you all don't know this, you're the host of a show called Wonderama, which apparently you're just killing it. And let's talk a little bit about that for a second, because how many seasons have you done already?
We've had 4 seasons. There's 4 seasons we've done, but we worked on it for over 5 years.
Yeah.
Wonderama, it's before my time, before your time, but it's a show, dude, that was on television dating back to the early 50s. So it ran, it was one of the longest running television programs in history, on for almost 30 years in the 50s, the 60s, and the 70s. And it was a huge show, like Mr. Rogers was. It was a kids program. You have 100 kids plus in the audience every episode. It used to be a 3-hour, you'll appreciate this, a 3-hour live children's program every Saturday.
Crazy.
And 3 hours, and it, but it wasn't like television that it is right now. It's not like SpongeBob or Simpsons or even reality shows where it's just chopped up really fast and it's a lot of things flashing at you. Boy, they'd turn the camera on and it would sit stagnant while the host would do like jumping jack exercises with the kids for like 5 minutes. Oh, and it's like, you'd think it'd be boring television, but you look back at some of those episodes and they're totally engaging. Yeah. And they still made a huge impact on those kids. And now those kids are all adults having their own kids and even grandkids. So we brought the brand of Wonderama back years ago. It originated in New York. It was filmed in New York. So that's where we do it. We film in New York. And we're going on
the 4th. How did you get involved in the project? Like, did someone just contact you and say, hey, we want you to be a part of this? Or
I got to give props to my uncle Jimmy, who's the youngest of the original Osmonds. And he got contacted by a guy named Chuck Armstrong, who's my fellow executive producer on the show. And he had got the rights to the show and he wants to bring it back. And they were talking about different hosts. And he got connected to my uncle Jimmy to kind of brainstorm different hosts across the country. And Jimmy made the pitch for me and just said, you know who you need to talk to is my nephew. He'd be perfect for this. And I'm so glad he did. I went up and met my buddy Chuck, and we sat down and started brainstorming ideas about what the show could be. He was telling me about the history of the show, Wonderama. Yeah. I was like blowing my mind. I'm like, I've never heard of this. And we connected. We did some screen tests, some testings with kid audiences, and it just connected. And we started filming in New York years ago. And we're on every single weekend, 52 weeks a year. We have tons of episodes done. And we're in syndication, so in about 100 million households across the country. And every single weekend, locally. Oh, this is my wife, by the way. Say hi.
Hi.
We're putting the band back together.
Oh, my gosh.
We're already doing a concert.
Wait, I want to join the band. This is great.
And she plays the bass. How cool is that?
That's fantastic. I love it.
It's super cool. It sounds amazing. A beautiful voice.
Yeah.
For the show Wonderama, though, it really didn't hit home until I went to New York and we were doing some on the street segments and I was meeting certain people. And as soon as I said the word Wonderama, these adults, they would just light up like a light bulb and go, dude, did you say Wonderama? That was my childhood. And they freak out. And I'm going, what? This is crazy. One case in point, I remember going and interviewing one of the winners of America's Got Talent years ago. And there were these two huge twin brother bodyguards in front of the door. And we came with a film crew and we were supposed to meet her and do a quick interview. And they stopped us all intimidated. Like, and they said, who are you guys with? What do you want? I'm like, well, we're with Wonderama. We're here to interview. And Jackie Evancho, we're like, what? They just stopped us. Didn't care about anything else. They just said, did you say Wonderama?
Yeah.
And then these two huge dude, massive, like The Rock, they just turn into butter. They're like, oh my gosh. They're like, I learned to tie my shoes on Wonderama.
No.
Wasn't I telling you today? Dude, I was telling you just this morning. I was tying my shoes and telling you about Wonderama.
Yeah.
So there's this brand that's really powerful. And we're bringing back to kids nowadays that same magic. It's a live studio audience of about 100 kids. We bring in dance groups from all over the world, all over the country, singing groups. We'll do cooking segments with like a MasterChef Junior or we'll do science experiments with these genius kids and we'll blow stuff up. A lot of messy games and prizes like Circle of Pies where there's pies in the face and we're just making a huge mess. Kind of like Nickelodeon stuff.
Yeah, it's
and
a double dare.
It's cool, man. And I get to be like the big brother. Just, you know, none of our guests are ever usually over 18. They're all young and they're kids entertaining kids. And I love to be along for the ride. So one thing that's really cool right now, you can also stream it on Amazon Prime. You can go Facebook Live, Instagram, all that stuff. But Amazon also just picked us up as a select few shows that are out there, like PBS shows and some of their original content. And they put us for the next 3 months in front of their paywall, meaning that if you don't even have an Amazon Prime account or anything, you can still go and you can watch our seasons for free on Amazon Prime. Wow. And I think moms at home are like begging for more content entertain our kids in a fun way. So some cool stuff happening that way.
That's awesome. So you're doing that show and that's great because that shows more of your, I guess, acting side, right? You're being more in front of the TV and hosting and having.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess so. Yeah. But dude, I mean, as far as acting, that's your wheelhouse. Yeah. I just get to be the big 6-year-old that I am. You know, I get to blow stuff up and play games and dance and watch these talented kids just blow your mind. It's really cool,
man. Well, I'm stoked to check it out. And yeah, this is awesome. I'm sure there's going to be tons of people going.
Check it out. Let me know what you think. You know, let us know what you want to see. Cause we're actually in the discussions right now. Our next season, mm-hmm. we usually film throughout the summer. Well, it's in New York. Things have changed, obviously. Yeah. So we may have a whole new format to the show coming this next year. Yeah. It may be like this. We may be going live to, you know, some Irish dancers in Ireland. You know what I mean? Like, who knows what we're going to do?
Yeah, I like
It's going to be really cool. We're kind of just formulating what the show is going to be and how we can adapt to the culture now. But check out WonderamaTV.com. You can stream everything. Check it out. Let us know your ideas, man. Dude, I guarantee you've got a billion ideas. We should brainstorm.
My mind is always like going in a million different directions with that type of stuff. So absolutely. Yeah. I will totally check it out. Yeah. So you're doing that. Now you have a bunch of other stuff you're doing in the world of music as well that you were like talking to me about. You were talking about some stuff you're doing with Marie. What were some of the other things you were saying?
Yeah, with my Aunt Marie, she's busy. She's super cool and always has a packed schedule. She and Donnie had their show in Vegas for 11 plus years. They wrapped that, they closed that up, and now she's hosting the talk on CBS.
What I love about Marie is like she was always so busy, and yet she would still find time to invite me over for a Sunday dinner.
That's right. You did. You know Marie as well. That's right.
I do. Yeah, she's great. She's amazing.
In fact, maybe it was through Marie that we met. And my cousin Steven.
Yeah, maybe because I work with Steven. Yeah, he's that could have been what it was.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Dude, it's a small world. Utah world, but small world. But so my Aunt Marie, when she's not filming that, she gets a lot of chances to go out and do what's called these symphonic shows, which are really cool. So she's got a full Philharmonic symphony, and she invites me to come be like a guest singer with her, to sing some duets with her or do, you know, songs with the orchestra. And it is so fun. So on the weekends when she's not, occasionally we're able to go out and do those performances, which is so fun for me. And I'm honored to share that stage with her. Unfortunately, because of the climate, a lot of our shows over the next while have been postponed, canceled. So they're going to be, you know, we'll have to have new dates on those for the next little while. So that happens. But on the personal music front, I teamed up with my buddy Caleb Chapman. And I think you know Caleb as well.
Sounds super familiar, but yeah.
He has the Caleb Chapman Sound House, and it's a school. He's had for over 2 decades of training kids, a stomping ground for kids to learn music in a really cool way, not just become great musicians, but performers. And so we teamed up. Caleb and I teamed up, and we started a band, and it's a total big band. It's Frank Sinatra. It's Michael Bublé. It's American Songbook. We call it the Osmond Chapman Orchestra.
I love it.
At OCO. And we started recording some music. We wrote original songs, fresh arrangements to some of the classics like from Sinatra or Bobby Darin. But we'll also do Bruno Mars and Johnny Cash and Elvis Presley. We'll do great songs, but to a big band arrangement. And it's a 16-piece, full, legitimate big band. And it's, you know, saxophones, trombones, bass drums, keys, guitars, tuxedos. Yeah. And it's awesome. So the project, we have a brand new album that's going to be released. This summer, we were planning on getting it out there next month. Yeah. Delayed a little bit because of the craziness. But it's going to be distributed through Sony and some great friends of ours, Club 44 Records. And so keep an eye out for that. I'll post about it. Yeah, but it's so fun.
Send some links over my way even when you're done with that, because I'd love to listen. I mean, I you're just such a fantastic performer in all aspects. Like I came to that little concert that you were singing at.
That was fun, dude.
I was so sick. You were tired, but when you went on stage, I could never even tell. I'm like, how is he doing this? Like, how does he have the power to like just perform and be like super happy? And then you walk off stage and you're like, dude, I think you're gonna.
I'm gonna throw up.
Oh man,
it's because I think I'm genetically predisposed to smiling. It's just like in the blood, man.
You got it, man. You got this incredible charm.
I sleep with hangers in my mouth. That's how I do it.
Well, whatever you're doing, it's working. It's fantastic.
Thanks, man. You know how it is. The show must go on. I guarantee you've been on set and you're just sick as a dog and you're just like, we've got to get this done. Daylight's a burning, man. It's your one chance. Got to do it.
I've done episode, or not even an episode. It was a movie I was working on, and I remember being really sick. I'm the main actor. I have to have tons and tons of energy, 17-hour days, and somehow you get through it. I mean, you want to die when you're done, but you just kind of, there's like a mental shift that goes on that's like, all right, they said action, now I got to do my energy. But yeah, it's
tough, man. What have you found? I mean, your industry is a little bit different than mine. I mean, as far as acting,
sure.
What's the hardest or part that most people may not realize about your industry and what makes it, you know, I don't know. It's worth the sacrifice, but what is the biggest sacrifice in what you do?
Oh man. Well, you know, I think people say like, oh wow, you're an actor. Like it's so glamorous and stuff. But honestly, I like acting cause I like to act, you know, like that's my thing. I really enjoy acting, but if you're trying to go in for the fame or the glamour, you have a certain type of expectations. You may be disappointed because you get on set and you realize it's not that glorious. And some days are just really hot. Some days you're really tired. Some days you just don't want to be there. And whereas like sometimes if you're in a play and you're on stage, like you have months and months of rehearsals and then you go and you do it and it can be very electrifying and you have like that instant gratification, right? Of people responding. Or if you're singing on stage, you know, same type of thing.
Yeah.
Instant gratification. On a film, you don't really get that instant gratification. And I think here's something that was quite difficult was I spent, oh man, like there was this movie that I was working on. It was a one that I was producing. So raising all this funding for it, making the movie, spending just countless hours, like acting and acting and acting. And then after that, editing and editing and editing, taking forever, doing all this stuff to finally create this product and you put it out in the world and nothing happened. You know, like no one saw it, like nothing happened. And it's
blood, sweat, tears, ignored.
Yeah, you completely ignored. And it's very emotionally, like, just, I wouldn't say, it's not damaging, but it's just like very degrading. It's like very exhausting. You're like, wow, like what was the point of all of that? But it made me realize the joy you really have to take should be in the journey, not in like some final destination.
That's cool.
Like I need this to happen in order for me to feel validated and successful and all that stuff. Like,
yeah,
I will say that even though that movie would like monetarily didn't do well, the memories I made with my friends making that movie.
Priceless, man.
Priceless, totally priceless. And I wouldn't trade it.
And you gain so much knowledge on what works, what doesn't work, what you want to do next time. And sometimes timing of things is just everything.
Yeah,
absolutely. You know, I don't know if I completely agree with it, but I remember years ago when I had a stint on American Idol, I had a chance to meet a guy named Barry Manilow, and he spoke to all of us, and he said that his secret to success was this. He goes, there's no luck in success.
Mm.
I think there is timing. I believe there is. Like, some things have to line up. But he goes, there's no luck in success. Mm. The definition of success is preparation meets opportunity. And if you're prepared and the opportunity comes, boom, you're ready for it. Yeah. And I think everything you're doing, what you've learned from those experiences, like you're that much more prepared when that opportunity comes and the phone call happens, you can jump and be ready for it. And that, I think that's half the battle, is just showing up and being prepared to execute when you need to.
Absolutely. You know, and that's the thing, you know, you just have to keep on creating, you have to keep on doing things. And I really believe that, like, you have to find your joy, right? You have to find your joy in doing what you're creating, because I think what is worse than having, like, none of your dreams come true is having all of your dreams come true only to realize you're not happy, you know?
Like, oh, yeah.
I think that would be much worse, because now you realize, oh my gosh, I put so much time and energy into something that I never wanted in the first place. You know? And a lot of times people kind of go down this path of not really doing what they love, but what they feel like, oh, well, people are saying I should do it, so I should do it. And then at the very end, you're like, I'm not satisfied. I'm not.
You have to love what you do.
Yes.
What you love what you do. I mean, it's a cliche, it's a bumper sticker, but man, at the end of the day, and especially when you're on long sets like that, or you're on tour, like, it sounds so glamorous. Oh, you know, wow, you had a European tour, or you're all over the world. You know, what I saw was the inside of an airport and the inside of a hotel, and they all look the same. And then I saw the stage, and then you just hit it and quit it. And then you're just like so tired, and you're running, just energy just depleted. And you got to go to a lot of cool places, but you never got to see a lot of cool places.
Yeah.
It is the work.
Yeah.
The business of that show. It takes a lot.
Absolutely. But the thing as well, I really, man, and maybe people don't know this about you, but you do all these things that you do while experiencing chronic pain, you know? And I know, like, it's not something you advertise all the time, but I know you and I both felt a little comfortable talking about this, but you said that, how long ago has it been that you started feeling this pain? Because you experienced MS, correct? Is that right?
Yeah, multiple sclerosis, MS. Yeah. Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Yeah. It's something that I live with on a daily basis, and it's been since diagnosis was 2006. So 14 years has been, and the symptoms have been longer than that. Since Christmas Eve 2005 is when it really, the pain actually started. I vividly remember it. I was actually dating my wife at the time. And I remember doing a performance that night, and went home, and I took my shoes off, and I turned to Valerie, and I said, honey, my feet, something's wrong here. Something's wrong, because my feet feel like they're being crushed by a steamroller. Like I'm being just run over, smashed, and it's just this pain. I can't stop it. Yeah. And I just kind of brushed off, oh, I'm tired and getting sleep. And so it was the beginnings of living with what's called multiple sclerosis. And it's an autoimmune disease of the central nervous system. The immune system begins to attack the brain and the spine. It's specifically what's called the myelin. And that's the fatty tissue, the little rubber coating, so to speak, over your nerves.
Okay.
And it damages it. It causes sclerosis and scarring. And it short circuits your system to where all of a sudden your brain says, hey, move your finger, and that signal that goes down the spine to your finger, it stops. It gets cut off, so it stops you from moving. It can be other symptoms. It could be optic. Stop you from seeing, from breathing, from your organs functioning the way they need to, from the pain sensories. And so I have this right now. I have this burning, crushing pain, and I don't know what else to call it but pain, but like these hot, burning towels wrapped around my body, and they're just tightening every second right now. And it's from my toes all the way up to about right here. And it's constant.
And the top part, you don't feel it as much, but like the bottom, it's like you feel it.
It's pretty tight right now. It's burning right now. It's pretty aggressive all over. Right about my thighs and down, it gets even more intense. Mm. And it is constant. So there's that element. Other things that come with fatigue, cognitive dissonance, sometimes, you know, after relapses, because it's a progressive disease where I have a form of MS called relapsing remitting, where the immune system goes on to attack. It's just attacks the brain, and it's really active. It's active disease, and it's causing a lot of damage and swelling and inflammation. And And boy, it can cause a lot of problems. And then it goes into a period of dormancy, remission, and then it spikes and goes on this roller coaster. And I live with that constantly. You know, funny, we were talking about this even. I just had a follow-up appointment with my neurologist. I do that periodically, occasionally, and I'm in the hospital every 4 weeks to do infusion therapy, MRIs and such, and I just had MRIs. So I had a Zoom meeting with my neurologist yesterday to talk about latest scans, what's going on in my brain, what are they seeing, is it progressing, how's the therapy that I'm on doing, my diet, my prayer, meditation, all the lifestyle things that I do, where am I at? And fortunately, I am living a miracle, Taryn, and I think you know that. But at the beginnings of that pain years ago, it quickly moved up my legs. Ooh. It hit my hands. My eyesight started to diminish, and I quickly went into a wheelchair. And a lot of people didn't see me in that phase. I have only a few pictures of it, but I couldn't move a thing from the chest down. And the fact that I'm walking, that I'm moving, not great. I hide it pretty good. I have my issues and balance and stuff like that. But the fact that I'm moving in general and able to do a kids TV show, be a host of a kids TV show, to perform with my band, to be on stage, that is truly a miracle. I don't take that lightly.
Yeah,
it's not all peaches and roses. I have my moments, certainly, but I also recognize how blessed I am. And I see people around me that have MS that are going through horrific things, and all of us, we all go through our own trials, our own level of stuff.
Yeah.
And these are the cards I've been dealt, and so hopefully I can wear it with a smile and do my best. And certainly, just because I have MS, it also means that my family, that my wife, my kids, they live with MS too, and it's not always rose-colored glasses.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, like, it's, I was shocked when you told me that you had MS, because you just exude so much joy all the time, you know, and you seem to live like a very like relaxed, like kind of a pain-free life, but yet to know that you're going through chronic pain all the time, like that would just be so difficult.
Thanks, man. If you see like a little bit of lines and grimacing, like I'm really trying to listen to you sometimes and just like gritting my teeth, or I'm just zoning out. I think I do put on a face sometimes and I do hide it, but maybe, I don't know. I think if I can hedge my bet, this is one thing I know I've learned. I've learned a lot of things, but every single neurologist and every doctor I've ever met, And I sit on the board with great foundations for this. So I meet a lot of brilliant minds, so smarter than I, but they tell me this one thing. They say, David, when I diagnose someone with MS or with cancer or diabetes, or, I mean, there's the gamut. People usually always go one of two ways. And if they have a negative, dark disposition already, their outlook goes that way.
Yeah.
And it's just, you can almost predict it because of that, the power of thought, power of mind. And then those that have a positive disposition, those that fight, that just keep trying to keep, you know, trying to smile, trying to find something to laugh at every single day, they always do better. Maybe not perfect. They may not be doing the things they want to do completely. You know, I pick up a game of, you know, one-on-one basketball between the two of us, you're going to know pretty quick something's wrong with this dude
as far as
control. But if I can hedge my bet and force a smile sometimes and do that much better, why not? You know, what have I to lose?
Well, I'll tell you what, man. I mean, it's so interesting because there's a lot of people right now during times of uncertainty, they've come across like unexpected sickness, you know, and it's a tough time for people to live. And yet I see people like you that are constantly creating such positive media and content in the world, despite the pain that you've been going through for, gosh, 15 years, you know, and you're still fighting the good fight, and you're still creating positive outlooks and stuff. Now, you mentioned something about...
I'll tell you this much. Where much is given, much is required. And man, I stand on the shoulders of giants. My beautiful wife, my wonderful kids, like I have everything to live for and to set a bar for them. Mm. Part of the story, you also know this, you know my dad.
Yeah.
My dad has MS. He has the same disease, a different form of it. He has what's called primary progressive MS, but he's had that since I was just a little kid. Mm. And his mantra that he's always lived by, and it's for him, it sounds like a bumper sticker, but it's not. It's a way of life, was this. He told me when I was a kid, he said, David, I may have MS, yes, but MS does not have me.
Ooh,
and maybe that's a stubborn attitude to have, like, I'm going to do this. But maybe there's power in that. Maybe there's power in just keep fighting, keep pushing. So I have a lot to live up to, especially for my kids, and hopefully set an example. And I fall short of the mark a lot, but I'm just got to keep trying.
Well, you know, what's beautiful about it is like, it's almost as if saying like, I don't know how to explain it. Like sometimes when people create, they create just because they want to create. It's like not even like, forget about the outcome. You create because that's just who you are, right? You're a creator. And that's what I see about you. Like I see you as just a fighter. That's just what you do. You know, it's not like I'm going to fight with the expectation of like one day, all this is going to, you know, go away. You fight because that's what you do, you know, and you have like this positive spirit in you. And it's such an inspiration for everybody, especially myself, you know, when I see what you're doing, and it's just so awesome.
Thanks. We all help each other. We're all, if you believe it, I do. We're truly brothers and sisters. We're in this fight together. Yeah. This life is so fast. It's fleeting. I mean, you can see the rings on the tree when I look at my kids. And I was just talking to someone else just yesterday about how fast our kids are growing up, how fast we're growing up and getting old. It's a blink of an eye, man. Hurry up and be happy.
Yeah, exactly. So let me, I guess this is going to be a way to kind of end this conversation, but I appreciate so much of it. You mentioned something about how, like, when the doctors treated people, like those that have a negative outlook go even more negative, and those that have a positive outlook go even more positive when like something challenging like this happens. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess what would be your advice to help people have a positive outlook if their outlook is kind of negative right now? Like, what do you think that they can do to look for the optimism and the joy when the circumstances seem extremely uncertain?
But that's the $1 million question. And I'll tell you this much, having something like this is a constant, you know, almost water torture reminder.
Yeah.
That's burning, crushing. It reminds me constantly of the mortality of things and how fragile we are.
Yeah.
And it also helps you to look outward. And every single day, practically every day of my life, I meet someone or come across someone or hear a story of someone that's going through certain circumstances that I can't even fathom. I could never imagine trading places with. Mm-hmm. And to see them go through that and to fight and put a smile on. And it's not the disease, it's not the challenge that gets you down, but it's the lack of hope. And so it's finding something to have hope with and on. Sometimes you become what you think about.
Yeah.
And what our surroundings are, what your village is, can be a big influence that way. So trying to surround yourself with positive influences and people. If there's, you know, negative influences and just Debbie Downers, if there's just a negative approach to things, find the light, find those that lift you up, and you by osmosis gravitate towards that and become. So find your village, hang on to hope, know that that if you're going through the hardest time of your life right now, that it's going to change. Mm-hmm. Things always change, and they will evolve. They may not go in the ways that you want them, but they will change.
Yeah.
And so look for that and expect that. And and also on the other side, the flip side, if you're going through the best time of your life, recognize that life changes fast as it has. I mean, look at our world. It's just like overnight. It's crazy. We're in a different place. And so you expect that, prepare for it mentally, and hang on to hope. Find things that give you that strong foundation. And also look outward. And, you know, I think in giving and in being charitable and loving, there is power in that, no matter what theology or what faith you have. That is truth. And as you give, you receive. Mm. And that there's a lot of hope to be had when you look outward.
Yeah, I love that, man. I mean, I think, oh gosh, like it's just wherever you put your attention to grows, right? And finding the things that like that you can be hopeful for, and yeah, like just reaching outside of yourself and serving and getting outside of your thoughts. It's so important. And I think like that's just a great way to, that's a great message to end on, man. I mean,
I've said this little tidbit before, but I think it's a really powerful one. There was a moment when I was in my wheelchair and I was at my parents' house. This was years ago. I was dating Valerie at the time. Yeah. We knew we wanted to get married. We knew we wanted a family. And I remember this family gathering. And as I sat there in the chair, I looked over at my brother and he was wrestling on the floor with his son. And it was just that cute Hallmark moment of a father and a son. Yeah. And I remember watching it. I was smiling like this, just, it was cute. And I was by myself, just in my thoughts. And then that change happened in my thoughts. And everything I saw turned dark. And I hated it. And it was just, it was like it was mocking me. And I thought, I'll never have that. That will never be me. Mm-hmm. And the question, the burning question was, why? Why did this happen to me? Mm-hmm. On what we're talking about, the flip side of that, what I learned is I can't ask that question anymore. Why did this happen to me negatively? Unless you make sure you ask the same question for everything positive and good and loving and warm that happens in your life.
Yeah.
Why did this happen to me? Mm. And as you start to scale those, man, my cup overflows and yeah. I'm blessed beyond measure, better than I deserve.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it, right? Like asking yourself, hey, why are all these good things happening to me? You know, and being authentic about it, because that is true. Like I've seen that in my life. Just sometimes I joke about this with some of my friends, but I tell them that I suffer from excessive joy. you know, I'm like, I don't know what to
you
do.
You kind of have that permagrin. You always you have that bright smile. Like,
yeah, well, sometimes I do. Like I just find myself just overflowing with happiness for no reason. And people are like, wait, why are you so happy? And I'm like, I have no idea. I just am. Sorry, you know?
And you've got that wit, that humor, finding something to laugh at. I love that. And I find help in laughter, in comedy. Yeah.
We
can laugh at ourselves.
Laugh at ourselves, man. Like that's one of the reasons why I do comedy and why I've created like a lot of the content that I have tends to be very lighthearted, tends to be like a friend of mine who watched the two pilots that I did says, dude, just watching those shows made me happy. And I'm like, that's a perfect way to describe it, dude. I want to make content that just makes people happy, right?
It'll go full circle to the Something Good News, the John Krasinski. Yeah. It's like, I want to see something that's uplifting. And there's so much negativity out there.
Yeah.
Just, you know, it's nice and refreshing to hear something positive. Yeah. Surround yourself with that as much as you can.
Absolutely. Well, David, honestly, thank you so much, man, for taking the time and chatting. And
it took me a while to finally get on here to get set up to come do this. Sorry.
No, yeah. It was perfect. It was amazing. You know what? It was worth the wait. It was worth the wait for sure.
Thanks. Well, anytime. And seriously, we need to collab and
definitely. Do some stuff together. Okay? I would love that. So yeah, let's.
I'll act. You sing.
Dude, that sounds great. It sounds like a real winning combination. It's gonna be amazing.
Okay. I'll pretend to act. You pretend to sing.
Okay, that sounds even better.
All right, awesome, dude.
Man.
Hey,
well,
thanks, man.
Again for chatting. Okay.
Anytime. Right. Anytime. Take care.
Okay.
See ya.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to the Lemonade Stand podcast, and we hope you enjoyed this episode. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you use to be alerted when we release new episodes. We'd also love to hear your feedback in the reviews, and if you or someone you know has an awesome lemonade stand story, please reach out to us on social media and let us know. Thanks so much and have a great day.